Wargaming Recon is proudly sponsored by the Maine Historical Wargamers Association. They're the folks behind Huzzah! Historical Wargaming for New England. Huzzah will take place May 18th through the 20th, 2018, at the Doubletree in South Portland, Maine. Experience some of the best historical wargaming at Huzzah! Visit www.huzzahcon.com for more information. Wargaming Recon is proudly sponsored by Enfilade. Enfilade is a flagship historical wargaming convention for the Northwest Historical Miniature Gaming Society. Enfilade is held annually over Memorial Day weekend at the Red Lion Inn in Olympia, Washington. Enjoy the largest historical miniature gaming convention west of the Mississippi at Enfilade. Visit www.nhmgscitadel.com for more information. Welcome to Wargaming Recon. I am your host, Jonathan J. Reinhardt. Wargaming Recon is the only member of the TSR Podcast Network to discuss historical and New England gaming. On this episode of the show, I am joined by the one and only Mr. Adrian Benson. Adrian, how are you today?
I'm doing great, John, and thank God I'm the one and only.
You are the one and only. You are irreplaceable.
Okay.
I mean, we've tried, but the clones just don't work. They just keep on going, bah. And I don't know what that's about.
Oh, Lord.
They're like, call me Dolly. Okay, I guess. But, like, it's kind of weird, right? It's Dolly. Yes, I'll call you Dolly. But really, what does this rule mean, Dolly? Ma, I don't know. People are going to be like, what the heck are we listening to? It's so weird, right?
Yeah, it is. Yeah, definitely a gaming podcast.
It's been a while. We took off the last episode, unexpectedly, which was episode 214, and now this is 214. Just that one didn't come out, and I said why on social media. But the last one that came out was one that you were supposed to be on, and you unfortunately weren't able to do, but that's okay. It's the Dwarven Forge Caverns Deep Kickstarter.
Yeah.
Did you get to listen to that or watch any of this stuff or see the social media?
I watched part of it. I didn't watch the whole thing. I did follow it on social media, obviously. Their Kickstarter was pretty amazing, as everyone expected.
Do you know what? Privately in conversations with them, I think maybe more me than them, but the hope from them was that it was going to raise more money than it did.
Really?
And I really thought, I know caverns aren't as popular of a setting for like that kind of thing, but I really thought that they were going to get at least between 4 and 5 million. And I mean, you can't sneeze at what they raised. They raised over what? Over three?
It was over three. Yeah. I don't remember exactly, but
like I should know because I backed the darn thing. And yeah. I tell you, their Kickstarter, and we're going to like properly review it and everything once I get all the stuff. But like their Kickstarter is one of the most unusual and interesting Kickstarter projects I've ever backed. Not that I've backed like gazillions, but I've backed maybe a dozen or so. And it's unlike any of them that I've ever backed.
I've only actually backed two, the Cigar Box Battle Mats, of course, and, also Firelock Games, the, Blood and Plunder expansion, No Peace Beyond the Line, which I actually just got in the mail the other day.
So that would be three, right? Because there's been two.
Yeah, there was two Cigar Box Battle and then the Firelock Games, Blood and Plunder. I found their Kickstarter kind of hard to follow. I mean, it was
Firelock or?
No, Dwarven Forge.
It was yes. Like,
what the heck do I get if I And they did release a ton of videos, and I ended up watching all the videos that they put out that they discussed, you know, this is what you would get, how it fits together, and that helped clear it up. But at first, when I was first looking at it, it was very confusing. But
one of the things that kind of really pumped me up was with their previous one, Dungeon of Doom or whatever they called it. Like you said, the videos. So Nate Taylor, their creative director, who kind of handles the day-to-day operations of it, he's a video guy. So he comes from a great video background, editing and creating and all that kind of stuff. And so he did these amazing videos, like 10 times better, 100 times better than their previous ones that they had kind of done on their own without him for Dungeon of Doom. And I thought, this is fantastic. And it got me so excited. And then I felt really bummed that I never committed to that Kickstarter. Yeah. So when I knew this one was coming out and talking with Nate and talking with Stefan, I was like, okay, first of all, they have to come on the show to talk about it because Stefan, as you know, right? Stefan's a hoot, right?
Yeah, yeah.
He's wicked smart. He's very talented. I'm giving away where we're at. But he is like, he's someone who like, he just lifts a room and like, he creates a vibe of his own.
Yeah.
And he's definitely a creative type and it's wonderful. So to actually be able to interact with that kind of personality for me, it's so different because I'm kind of humdrum as people might know.
Yeah. You're used to interacting with like, you know, me.
So. Well, yeah, and I, like you've said, I'm like an 83-year-old man in a younger guy's body. So
yeah, you are.
I kind of am, but like it was great to interact with them. And then I got even more excited for the Kickstarter. But then when it opened, I was like, what the heck? I felt like Alice in Wonderland because I didn't get it. And I guess a lot of their backers are repeat backers. So they have this very firmly established base of fans who know what they do, how they do it and everything.
Yeah,
and
they're
all. Like they're all on board and I'm like, but where do I go and what do I do? And I don't understand any of it. It's super steep learning curve.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, I kind of want to chuck you guys some money. Don't make it hard. But, and there was a lot of, there were pieces of it that, I mean, we talked and we can talk about a little bit more of the stuff we got in mind that's coming up. But, I did want to get some of the stuff and it's just between trying to figure out what I would need to get to make it work together for what I wanted to do, which was actually the hard part. I said knowing what you would get for the amount of money you spent. That's not really true. What made it hard for me was like, okay, this is what I get for this amount of money. The heck can I do with it? You know, how can I fit it all together and whatnot?
Mm-hmm.
But between that and just the plain expense of it to get enough stuff that would seem to make it worthwhile was just, I wasn't really, and you were aware of the, it's a good thing I didn't actually. You're aware of all the issues I've had with my vehicle lately.
Almost yeah, you've had some unexpected automotive expenses, right?
Yeah, $5,000 worth of repairs there. So it's a good thing I didn't throw $700 away on Kickstarter stuff. But anyway.
Well, it wouldn't have been throwing it away because it lasts a lifetime. So you would have it. So your son, Reese, probably would have gotten some, or your daughter, Rachel, would have got some, right? When the untimely time of your demise happens to be, and then like they'd pass it on to, I don't know, whoever, like it would live on for eternity.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause it's made of dwarvenite.
I swear to God, that doesn't break. When my daughter, who's 3 and a half now, she was what, like 2, 2 and a half. I gave her some of the pieces I showed you, some of the stuff from their city builder stuff. And she's like playing with it, like the way like a 2, 2 and a half year old does. And
yeah, yeah, no.
And then, to her, everything was a baby, but like she's throwing stuff around and my wife's like, oh no, you're breaking daddy's. And I'm like, it's fine. It'll last. Like I threw the stuff down my stairs.
Yeah.
And not a ding on it. The paint didn't scratch. Like it's like a Twinkie, right? It'll survive a nuclear explosion. Yeah. It'll be good.
Yeah.
That's not a statement that they're endorsing or guaranteeing, and neither am I, but it's kind of like that. I mean, it's just, it's there. I think they kind of caught on that this Kickstarter was more difficult than any of their others for people to understand, mainly because they, I guess in the past, like they've kind of gotten questions from backers or potential backers where like a backer would want, say, like one component, right, of a larger encounter, because their whole thing is role-playing games, right?
Right.
And they might not want the whole thing. They might just want like the entryway, or they might want, they make these great, they call them terrain trays, which are kind of like smaller battle mats, I guess you could think of, but they're all magnetic and you can pre-build onto it and stuff. So people might just want that, but not the other stuff. So with this one, they made it where basically everything is able to be obtained individually. And so like you got to price that out, like how many do you get of each thing? How do you do it? But then like also how can you do that in a Kickstarter so you don't have 5 million different backer levels?
Right.
And of course you don't want to dump all that all at once because then it's like, oh my goodness, what is all this stuff? But at the same point, I guess like they treat a Kickstarter campaign kind of like a role-playing game campaign. So like,
yeah, where you,
you know, like
adventure walking down the, and suddenly you turn the corner and you see whatever the next great thing is.
Here's the encounter. It's going to cost this amount.
Yeah.
I'm going to show you the alternate paint scheme the next day when you move further into. And so like, I tell you, even if you don't want or can't use the stuff or you don't want to spend the money, like you really have to just back their Kickstarters for a dollar. And just join in on the ride because it's unlike anything I've ever seen. Yeah. The number of comments they get every day, all hours of the day. So they have people based on the East Coast and then they have this whole other online team who's on the West Coast. So they basically cover almost all time zones, of getting questions and interaction on the Kickstarter campaign, but then they also have their own message boards on their website, and they are thorough. Like, the fans are incredibly smart. They create all their own spreadsheets and share them, and they do like map mockups and all this kind of stuff to try to make it easier. One thing that I found really hard, and I think I actually think maybe it didn't quite sink in with you when I told you, was that even though the Kickstarter campaign ends on, they do like a 20-day campaign,
yeah,
it doesn't actually end then. So like, the Kickstarter thing ended and they took the money that I pledged. I'm not done shopping with them if I want, because they do like a month later, they do a pledge manager kind of thing where you can buy more stuff. So you can't lower your pledge because Kickstarter's already given them that money.
Right.
But you can be like, well, actually, you know, 3 days after the campaign ended, you released this other stuff. So I want this other stuff too. And then you add it on or whatever, which is kind of smart because then they don't pay as much in fees, I guess, to Kickstarter.
Yeah.
But like, as a backer, if you don't understand that, you're like, what the heck do I do? And what do you mean when it's over, it's not over? Like, how do you plan for that?
Yeah.
I had a really, really hard time figuring it out. But what saved me was I was determined that I was going to get some cavern things. Later on, they released a forest setting and trees, which like I really, really wanted, but I didn't want to spend the money on. So I was determined I was going to get cavern things. So I bought, they have a starter cavern set, which is great. And then they have a starter floor set that gives you basically more floor space. So even with the starter cavern, you can actually have enough walls so that you can have a pretty large open area in the middle to do some stuff. And I thought that'd be great for like a Frostgrave thing, or could even do like a skirmish level or a section of a battle, like in bolt action or whatever. Just any of these kind of things. And yeah, it has a fantasy bent, but I think you can really use it for other stuff. And it's just, I don't know, it's gorgeous. It's absolutely gorgeous. So I can't wait to get the stuff in person. It'll be about a year, I think, before it gets there.
Yeah, it is very nice stuff. I've looked at some of the stuff on their website and some of the, you know, they've got the castle and the town setting. A lot of that's more appealing to me actually than the caverns. Cause I mean, you could use caverns for like the kind of stuff that we tend to play, like the World War II and whatnot. You'd really be kind of stretching it though with a lot of it. Cause, you know, it's fantasy themed. Obviously it is. So it's like, you know, you got your little Japanese and American Marine cavern battle going on in the Japanese tunnels, but just ignore that alder sitting over there, that kind of a thing. So I don't know. It's potentially useful in that regard, but it's definitely more geared toward fantasy. I think I kind of disagree on the generic nature of it there, but the town is a different story. The buildings and stuff, you could use that for anything. You could use it for medieval, even probably like if you're doing the European, you know, like 7 Years' War, Napoleonic's, Great Northern War, whatever, it would work for all those settings, I think, most of that stuff.
Maybe, this might be a stretch, but maybe even Saga a little bit. Or you could, I think you could do Black, well, no, you would do Pike and Shot, I guess, more with it than Black Powder, but yeah. You could use some pieces with Black Powder, I think.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah, I think so.
But it's nice stuff. One thing I have learned, if you do see stuff on their website that you want to buy, don't wait. You got to buy it when you see it, because it goes in and out of stock pretty quickly.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm sure. Cause yeah.
It's good stuff.
It is good stuff. And I noticed that when I was looking at the stuff on the website, there's not a lot of it in stock. At least when I was looking, there wasn't, but it's, you know, it's expensive to make and you definitely don't want to keep a lot of it in inventory, I'm sure. So
yeah, I think in the past they actually got figuratively burned by that, because they had a huge warehouse and had tons and tons of stock in it and wasn't moving. And so they're paying rent on this warehouse and all this other stuff and insurance or all those things. And they didn't want to have to do that, because like, they would lose money on the stuff.
Yeah.
Even if they sold it, like, they still would be out money on it. And so they kind of like revamped and they downgraded whatever. And now they kind of do this phasing sort of thing, kind of like in World of Warcraft, where, they'll have like certain stuff come in, and it's only there for a little while and they get what they know will definitely sell. So they kind of understock almost. Yeah. And then like 3 weeks later, there'll be another batch that'll come right in and then they'll have that there. And then like 3 weeks later, there'll be like another and so forth and so forth. And then they also stagger it too with the Kickstarter stuff. So that Dungeon of Doom from last fall, really, is just finishing getting out to backers. And so they're starting to, slowly get some of that into the online store, where I think most of it will be in by September of 2018.
Yeah.
I really appreciated that when they do that, they want to make sure that the backers get the stuff first, because there's been way too many Kickstarters where you hear these horror stories where it ends up in a store before backers even get it and for less. And you're like, what the heck?
Yeah, I tell you, you know how I love Firelock Games and Blood and Plunder.
Mm-hmm.
So I backed the No Peace Beyond the Line Kickstarter, and that got delayed a couple of times, which was fine. Stuff happens. They had issues with some of the manufacturers and whatnot. It was no big deal. But then I went to Historicon, and I was super excited because Firelock was there, and I got to meet some of the guys, and I'm looking around, and it's like, are you selling No Peace Beyond the Line stuff here before you send it out to the backers? And yes, they were. So
I hate that. I know it's considered a legitimate business plan because if you keep a certain amount back and you bring it to a big show like Historicon, you're going to drum up more PR and excitement and then
you
everything.
Are. And in their defense, their original plan, the Kickstarter should have been out long before Historicon. It wasn't, but anyway.
It does make you wonder though that like if they had that stuff, how come they couldn't get any of that to backers?
It's a good question. I didn't ask. I was having a good time and I didn't want to ruin it.
Yeah, you don't want to be Debbie Downer. I would have been like, hey guys, so what's going on here with this stuff? And how do you have it? And it's not.
Yeah, they've been kind of getting beaten up on they have a Facebook group for Blood and Plunder, of course, that I'm on. They've been kind of getting beaten up a little bit on it. In fact, there are guys who are still waiting. Their stuff hasn't shipped yet.
Wow.
I thought most of the US stuff had shipped, but of course they have European backers. I guess they're still waiting. So yeah, it was a good company, great game, but this Kickstarter was a little bit of a mess.
Well, this still been worse. It's definitely been worse.
Well, yeah, there's definitely been stuff that's been worse. Stuff that's never completed, never shipped, et cetera, et cetera. So
I've been hearing, not to turn this into a Kickstarter episode, but I've been following, this role playing game blog. You probably have heard of it called Tenkar's Tavern.
Yeah.
So it pops up very often, but I follow it because, and this is going to sound terrible, there, for people who don't know, there's conflict between the different branches of Gary Gygax's family, namely the wife he had when he died and her son with him, and then his children from the previous marriage. And so his widow is making all these crazy claims. I'm calling them crazy. They may not actually be crazy, but this Tenkar guy covers it on his blog, and then he has a podcast about it. And so in one of the podcast episodes where he's talking about this, and at first I was like, why is this episode like 5 minutes? It's like 15 minutes long. Turns out the guy podcasts every single day.
Oh, jeez.
I don't know how he does. I mean, they're only 15 minutes long, but every single day he puts out a new episode, which I think is quite impressive. And then he has this whole Discord channel. Anyway, so in one of the episodes, he was talking about Mrs. E. Gary Gygax, as she likes to be called when she's being stern. And he was talking about this other guy with the special dice rolling Kickstarter that uses pencils. So each side of the pencil is a different number in your roll. And I can't remember. I was going to look up the name. I can't remember the name of the guy. But I guess he did like two or three or even four Kickstarters for the same thing. And one or more of them got funded, but he's never delivered on the stuff. So this guy from Tinker's Tavern kind of basically calling shenanigans on him. And it's a case of like, where's the stuff? How come you're just now saying that you're getting, I don't know, a piece of equipment that you need to make the stuff when you said you had it before? What happened to the money? Are you just like running off with the money? And it's absolutely ridiculous. And I think there's a lot of that kind of shenanigans that happens, and it gives Kickstarter or any of these crowdfunding things a bad name. So when you get someone like, I don't know, Dwarven Forge, who's actually doing a good job, people are hesitant because they're like, well, what if they're like that guy who made those dice rolling pencils and I never got it? And
that's true. I mean, it's like anything on the web though, buyer beware. It's like you look at a guy that's offering it. I don't even understand what a dice rolling thing with pencils would look like, but you look at that campaign compared to say Dwarven Forge or someone like that. It's like you should be able to tell which one is probably going to be a good bet just by checking the history and which one you might want to maybe think about not backing. You know what I mean?
You would think I pulled up one of them. It's called Pencil Dice, and it was a staff pick on Kickstarter.
Interesting. Now that's interesting.
It created by D20 Entertainment. Almost 1400 backers pledged just over 38 grand to bring it to life. And there's other ones of it. And I believe this is the right one. And I don't like the idea to me is just really bizarre. But like enough people thought it was a great idea to do it. And Oh, this is it. Ken Whitman. That's the guy's name. The guy's created six of these things. Six Kickstarters. Two of them are for pencil dice and RPG pencil dice. Deck dice, where you use a deck of cards to randomize, you know, his special ones. And he's done like other things. And like, I don't understand it. And then you get like Palladium Games, right? They're a big name in the hobby with that, Robotech Tactics that they, if we weren't a family friendly podcast, I would use a certain word for giving someone the short end of the deal. And they just weren't very good with all their backers and the money just disappeared. I mean, it's awful, but then you get someone like Firelock and they're getting beat up a little bit, but like the product's there. The game is good, as you said. What else happened when you were at Historicon? Because that's a pretty big thing to get to.
Nothing.
Nothing else happened. You didn't do anything. You didn't buy anything. You didn't play anything.
I bought anything.
Did you have blinders on? Were you like, I can't see you. I can't hear you. I don't know anything.
I bought a ton of stuff. Of course I did that. But yeah, I didn't play in anything. It was just kind of a spur of the moment thing. I was down there in Pennsylvania on business with my wife and, I had some spare time. I was like, hey, I'm going to run out to Historicon. And she came out with me, which was a bit of a surprise. But yeah, I just went out for the day and walked around. It was, they had it at the Lancaster Convention Center, which the last time I went, it was at the hotel in Valley Forge, which was awesome. And seeing the convention center in Lancaster was a huge disappointment. That as a venue, that is garbage. It is utterly terrible. The layout is awful. The main game room where they had a lot of the miniatures games going on was under construction. So the floor was torn up. It was like plastic sheeting all over the walls.
You're kidding.
It was complete garbage as a venue. I think this is the last year that they're there. There is another convention center that actually is in downtown Lancaster that's actually very nice. This one is actually outside the city. And I think they're going to be there next year. So that will be better, except it's in the city and parking is next to unavailable.
Yeah, it's called Don't Bother.
Yeah, so I don't know how that's going to work out for them. They've had some trouble with venues. So I don't know what they're going to do. I don't know how much longer they're going to be in Lancaster, but at least they won't be in that one next year because it was terrible. It was like a couple of years ago when we went to TotalCon. It was the last year TotalCon was at the Holiday Inn there in Mansfield. It was worse than that.
Oh my God, that was bad.
Yeah.
There was debris in the halls. Like,
yeah, it was worse than that. It was utterly terrible, very disappointing. Now the vendor hall was actually very nice, but because of the horrible layout of the convention center, it was in a completely different building from the hotel and you had to walk like it had to be 300 or 400 yards from the hotel to this other building where they had the vendor hall at. Now once you were there, it was great because, you know, it's Historicon. So everybody you've ever heard of as a vendor is there. But, man, it was pretty bad. It was disappointing. I kept telling my wife, I was like, it's not always like this. Usually they don't suck. It's not always like this. Usually they don't suck.
It sounds like I would have had a lot of complaints about it.
Yeah, you would have. But, I did run into a couple of people there. I ran into Mike Payne. He was playing a game. Tony Rieger I ran into. Jorg Bender from, Things from the Basement. So I ran into a bunch of people out there. So it was a good time. It was a good time. It was just a venue that was crap.
Did you see, Jorg got, a mention in the new issue of War Games Illustrated?
Yeah, I did. That's pretty awesome.
He's such a great guy. His wife is incredible and their company is out of this world. They actually have, going back to Kickstarter, they have a Kickstarter coming out, later this year, I think it is. I don't know details, but my suspicion is
be,
I think you're going to guess.
Samurai related, maybe?
I think it might be things that you could use with a certain popular feudal Japanese game people play right now.
That would not surprise me. Yeah, I've got a bunch of his stuff now and, I haven't put it all together, but yeah, I'm a big fan.
Like his instructions are great. The products are good. The prices are fair.
And the assembly is relatively simple too. It's like, you know how I've complained about foreground in the past, although I've put a couple of foreground buildings together lately and I don't know if they've changed or I've changed, but they haven't been as bad. I was actually able to complete them and didn't have to throw them in the garbage.
Hey, you're a new man.
Yeah. So, But his are just, the assembly is much simpler. So.
Have you put together that Sarissa Precision model from Gings of Rome yet?
Good Lord, no, that looks entirely too complex. I will eventually. What I need to do is paint the figures because there's not that many of them and we just need the figures to play the game. We can wing the terrain. That doesn't matter as much, but.
It is called Gangs of Rome, not Terrain of Rome.
Exactly. So we can make do there. I will put that, I'll tell you what the problem with it is, aside from the complexity, is it's big.
And oh, really?
You know what my situation is like. I don't really have the room that I need to spread everything out and do it properly. So that's going to make it a lot harder than it should be, but I'll get to it eventually.
You mean you don't have a 4-foot by 6-foot table at which you could game and paint and model?
No, I don't. Yeah. I know that you do, so perhaps I could give it to you and you could assemble and paint it.
Well, see, I was thinking perhaps you could come over someday and assemble and paint a deer.
Yeah, if your wife will let me in the house. Yeah.
I was about to say something I'm not allowed to say.
Okay.
I don't think there's any danger. It's for the after show, no.
Yeah, if you want to offer up the space, that's because it is pretty big and you would need to spread the parts out to see what's going on. The foreground buildings I've put together, they've been relatively small. They're 15 millimeter scale for battle group. And, yeah, they weren't too bad. So
I guess I didn't realize how big the one for Gangs of Rome is, but it makes sense. It's 28 mil. So it should be bigger.
Yeah. So, but I will get to that.
You mentioned that you got your stuff from the Firelock Kickstarter. What did you get?
I forget. I haven't opened it yet.
So nothing good?
Well, yeah, definitely. I got the Dutch faction and, I got, another boat, which eventually I'm going to paint and put them all together. What intimidates me with them is the rigging. Mm-hmm. You could get by with not rigging them. I mean, and just have, but that would be stupid, but you could. I got the Dutch faction set. There were a couple of unique leaders. Maybe the next time we do the show, I'm going to leave it in the box for right now. But the next time we do, if I'd have thought of it, I would have brought it up tonight. We could have done an unboxing, but, I did not think of it. So we're not doing that.
See, I thought my saying that I was going to unbox something would give you a hint that if you had anything fun, you could also unbox.
Yeah, but it didn't. So, but yeah, there was that. There's a new rule book in there because the rules have actually changed. I think not significantly. I have the PDF. I've read through it and bounced it against the old rule book. There are definite changes, but I don't think it's anything kind of incremental type stuff. So yeah, maybe the next time we do the show, I can open that up and we can have a look.
Cool. You mentioned new rules. I believe you told me earlier that you did a pre-order for a new set of rules.
Did I do that? Was that today? That was today.
That was today. Wow, you must be having a week, huh?
Yeah. Spending money I don't have. Like a drunken sailor, which is what I am.
Well, I was going to say it's apt, isn't it?
But, yes, I did pre-order the second edition of Black Powder. So I have been assured that my pre-order copy will be signed by Rick Priestley. So that's cool.
That is cool.
Yeah. And, yeah, that was shipped, I think October. I'm not sure beginning and middle, but it'll ship in October this year. So. But yeah, I was excited about that. I'm anxious to see what has changed there because there are some things that people have, I don't know if I should say are enraged about with Black Powder, but.
Well, such as?
The turn sequence, for example, move and fire. It's one of the few games that does that. It's usually fire, then move. Unless you know what I mean? So it's like a lot of people house rule that and adjust the order of that. Some people actually don't like the way orders are given. Like if you fail an order roll, depending on which commander it is, it's like then you're done. You're done for the turn. You can't give any more order. A lot of people hate that. I kind of like that actually. There's ups and downs to it, of course, but those are the kind of things a lot of people house rule away. So yeah, I'll be anxious to see what they changed. We haven't actually played it in a while, have we? It's been a while.
It's funny. It's one of my favorite games and we haven't played it in a while.
Yeah.
But I'm also, and actually speaking of social media, I had put it on something I fell off the horse doing, but doing the like games that impacted us, tabletop games. And so Black Powder was one of my top 10 games that has impacted me, but I don't think I'm going to buy the second edition rule book.
Really? Why is that?
So I need to know what's changed for us. So I definitely don't want to pre-order it.
Yeah.
Because like maybe it hasn't changed enough, or maybe it's changed too much, right? No, I'm comfortable with the current edition, comfortable with how it plays. I'm familiar enough with it. I don't have to spend a whole lot of time thinking about it, like a quick refresher and I'm good. Do I really need to learn another edition of rules? This is one of the things that I hated about Games Workshop products. There's always a new edition. And admittedly, it's not like they were like, oh, 2 years later, let's do a new edition of Black Powder. It's been some time and they could be legit, you know, need for it. But like, do I want to spend, what is it, like $50? Do I want to spend $50 on a rule book?
That, yes, yeah, $48.
There you go. Like, how often am I going to use it? Space for it? And like, and then when is it going to happen to the Hail Caesar rule book that I have? When is it going to happen to all the other stuff? And like, it's bad enough with Bolt Action that I had to deal with that. Cause I got in the cusp between the end of first edition and into second edition. And then you get into edition wars and like, that's just all nonsense I don't need.
Yeah, I guess. I don't know. I don't think it's going to be like, it's not like you're learning a whole new game, and they're definitely not like Games Workshop where it's, you know, we need to release a new edition every 18 months in order to keep making money hand over fist. It's definitely not that. I don't know. We'll see when it comes and see what it's like. Maybe you'll change your mind. I mean, Bolt Action was the same way. That had been out for,
A while.
Been out for a while before they released the second edition. And second edition of Bolt Action, a lot of stuff is very different from first edition. And there's definitely additional wars there. There are people who swear by first edition and second edition sucks. And then there's guys who are the other way around. And then there's other guys who are like, who cares what they do with Bolt Action? Because what you should be playing is Chain of Command, stuff like that. So, but I don't think that's going to be the case with Black Powder, though. I'd be surprised if it was.
No, that's true. I think the primary reason for me is I don't know how often I'll actually play it because there'll come a time, the person I play it the most with is you, right? And there'll come a time when that's probably not going to happen. And then how often am I going to be pulling that stuff out and playing?
Probably not a lot. Yeah. Cause I am getting tired of you. So yeah, it's hard to say how much longer we'll be gaming together.
Exactly. So. And then it's like, it'll just be sitting on my shelf and people be able to see me behind me when I'm doing videos.
It's a really good looking book though. So I mean,
yeah, it does look nice. And then the collector's edition is even cooler looking. So there is that.
Yeah, I did not order the collector's edition. I actually like the regular edition, the way it looked better. But we will see.
Yeah, but I know there's a lot of excitement about that. I think the pre-order is only directly through Warlord, right? You can't get it from third-party people, no Amazon or Miniature Market or any of that kind of stuff.
Right.
If you go to, it's like, what do they call it? Warlord Game Day or whatever that is? Warlord Day in September. I don't know what they call it, but like you can pick up copies there.
Yeah, you can pick it up there if you pre-ordered it. I'm obviously not going to be doing that. I'll get mine in the mail in October. That's fine.
You mean you're not going to travel to the UK to go to the HQ and play in the game day?
Well, if I was over there, I would go, but I don't think a special trip is warranted. No.
That's unfortunate. Just think how much fun you'd have. You'd be there with the game designers and
I think it would be a hell of a lot of fun, but, I don't think I'll be flying to UK for that.
I bet you would, I bet if you did it, you would see some people who we know. You'd see Neil Shook, I bet. I bet you'd see Henry Hyde. I bet you'd see someone from Current Story Publishers. I don't know. I'm not exactly sure who would go, or maybe a few of them. You'd see some people we know.
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt. But, that'll have to wait.
That's unfortunate.
Yeah.
Do you want to see what's in my package?
I know what's in your package, but yeah, let's have a look.
So you and I both backed the second Cigar Box Battle Kickstarter, which was for their, I was about to say people can see, but they can't see on the video because I'm using a new setup. But so I'll show. So it's not their fleece mats, which I like to cuddle and snuggle and wrap around me and pretend I'm a superhero. But it's their, standard, setup. I forget what they call it. So I got two. It's going to be really crinkly while I open it. So people might want to cover their ears or it'll get edited out or something. Although maybe it won't because Joshua's not currently editing audio. We'll come back to that in a minute. So you have to excuse the crinklies because I want to make sure I don't cut through the fiber because that'd be terrible.
And don't cut through your hand either. We know how that goes.
Yeah, Michael Johns isn't here to make sure I'm safe. Although, did you hear it? He's downsizing his hobby stuff?
Yeah, he posted a bunch of stuff on Facebook about it. I saw that.
So he's still going to be playing, you know, sometimes, but not as much.
Yeah.
Okay, so inside the outer packaging is another package. It's like a one of the, what do they call them? The Russian nesting dolls.
Yeah.
No, I'm trying. You haven't gotten yours yet, have you?
I have not.
Now, what designs did you back for?
I forget. I got the Caribbean Island. I got the Caribbean Sea. Hmm? And I forget what the other one was. Jeez.
Oh, you got three.
Yeah.
Oh, nice.
I can't. Tundra. I got Tundra.
Oh, you mean the one that you guys said looks like a dirty dishcloth?
I didn't say that. I think Carrie said that. I didn't say that.
I didn't say it was you. I said you guys.
Okay.
It was a group. So I really wanted the New Europe 2 or whatever the other one is that goes with my New Europe mat.
Mm-hmm.
But the problem is, and why I didn't choose that, is my New Europe is their plush, the teddy bear fur. And so I wanted the two to match.
Oh.
It probably doesn't matter, but I wanted it to match. And this is the standard, high quality.
Non-plush,
Yeah, stuff. You would think I would know what it's called. But I was like, oh, I was really excited for the stuff and the new designs and everything. And then I was like, well, it's the other stuff. So I wanted to kind of blend in with the other stuff that I have. And like the plush is my love. I do believe next year they're going to do another plush Kickstarter, which has me really excited. And their Kickstarter this time around was great. And the thing that I really loved, and I'm curious if it's something that you really liked about it as well. They saw they weren't going to be hitting their funding goal to open up all the stretch goals, and backers had asked like when they would open the stretch goals or what it would take to open them.
Yeah.
And they just said, to heck with it. We're going to open them all now. And so they're like, here you go. Cause I mean, the designs, right? You can just pick whatever design. So they did all that. So you could pick any of the designs, and that was great PR, great customer service right there. Just fantastic.
Yeah, I agree. I like that.
I think that's one of the things that they're really known for. Stellar customer service, like Apple level customer service.
Yeah.
So I got two. Oh, okay. So they packed them together. Hold on. Now this is going to be a stupid thing to complain about, but the quality of the plastic that they use to wrap it in doesn't feel as nice as with the plush mats. And that's not going to matter to anyone, but like I store them in the plastic and I don't know why, but I'm very tactile.
You're right. That is a stupid thing to complain about.
But you're talking to the guy who spent 20 minutes once talking about how nicely a thing's boxed up. The, Wargamer's Terrain, the wonder of the box and how special it is with a certain type of tissue paper and the packaging and the color of the box and everything.
Yeah. Also a stupid thing to discuss for 20 minutes. I appreciate the level of quality of his packing, but it's not something you need to talk about for 20 minutes.
You're right. I should have spent an hour on it. It was really worth even more time. So I got, Adrian, I wish you were here so you could feel this.
Oh, Jesus God.
Oh my goodness. Really? It feels almost as soft as the plush mat. How? Cause my other one that's not plush doesn't feel this as I'm like, cuddling it. Doesn't feel as nice. Listeners, you almost really think I'm very wackadoo, but you should know by now when I get stuff like this, I'm Batman and off we go. So I got this one. I finally wanted a water one.
Yeah.
So the first one I got was their, Atlantic Ocean one. So it's a little bit darker. It has some nice, spots in it to kind of give almost like waves, and it's of course 6 foot by 4 foot plus. And since it's one of the newer mats, like the other newer ones, they have their logo on the underside. Early on, they put them on top and people were not happy about that. So this is underneath, and the bleed through doesn't look bad. Actually, just kind of like a dark spot. So that's great. These are single sided. It's, oh man, gorgeous mat. Like, you know, they're gorgeous. Like you look online and you think, wow, that looks really nice. But does it look really nice in person? Yes, it looks really nice in person, right?
Yeah.
And this is an older design of theirs, but one that I just thought would work really well. They have a Pacific Ocean one, which is nice. And they have a Caribbean one, which I almost got because I thought, oh, this would be really nice too. Cause then we could use it for Blood and Plunder or whatever else. And, but then I was thinking like, this would actually get more use, I think, from the old Wizards of the Coast, Axis and Allies War at Sea.
Yeah.
And most of that would be better off with this than a Caribbean mat.
Yeah, for the most part.
And then, like, you could use this for anything. So even though it's Atlantic, right? I've noticed lately on their Facebook, they've been showing people do, games where they're blending the mats together. So they might have a water section in the middle and then they have like a grass mat on either side and they just kind of fold stuff over and they put a bridge or whatever.
Yeah.
So like this would be great. I'm obviously it's deep water, right? Looking at it because it's a dark blue,
yeah.
But just kind of have like a center section of this on the table to yeah. represent some sort of water. And then you have the grass and stuff on the other side. So that way you don't have to worry about having.
Yeah, it'd be good and a good, easy and inexpensive way to do like an actual scale sized river. Like if you wanted to do something like Pegasus Bridge, because I mean, mm-hmm. let's face it, most people when you're doing rivers, you either get like the little skinny, narrow streams that are not wide enough to actually represent a river, or you just get like cut felt, which actually works fine.
Yeah.
To throw down. But you don't actually get any like really scale. I mean, there are people that go whole hog and make special river boards out of the extruded polystyrene and, you know, do all the water. But that's never going to be me. I wish it was going to be me, but it's never going to be me. Mm-hmm. But yeah, if you have a land mat for each side and then, you know, leave maybe 3 or 4 inches worth of water. And that's a good way to do it.
It's a great, like you could use Wargamer's Terrain. He makes, you know, rivers that are wide enough. That yep. actually makes sense. But even then, like, they actually have those rivers, it has embankments on it, right? So if you don't want the embankment and you're doing this thing and you actually want to mold it so that you have elevated terrain on either side to show like a cliff or something as you go to the water or a steeper incline,
yeah.
like that wouldn't work. Whereas like this would be ideal. So you get, like you said, you get this mat and you shove it in the middle. And then the other one, which I found out after the fact, because I asked the Cigar Box Battle guys, if they've ever retired any of their mats, because they have a lot of different designs on their website. And they said, yes, they retired one once, but then customer demand was such that they had to bring it back. And so it turns out it's the other mat I got,
yeah.
which is their star mat.
Oh.
And I thought this would be great because our buddy John is really into Armada.
Yep.
And we could play on like a proper star mat instead of what we've used before. And then also for X-Wing, I thought it'd be really good. It'd be great. Not that we have any of the stuff put together, but I still have like that old Babylon 5 stuff and Battlestar Galactica stuff somewhere and just use it as a base. But like, this is I didn't even realize it had all this yellow in it for like a sun.
Yeah.
Or maybe that's plasma. I'm not quite sure, but it's a gorgeous mat. Just like the others, you get great color and everything. And, I should probably do a proper unboxing at some point or opening as I hit the mic because I'm a professional.
Yeah, yeah.
But like, it's gorgeous. There's just great definition on it. You get nice stars on it, a good field on it. You can tell what stuff is. But at the same point, it doesn't adhere to any particular scale. So you could use it for almost any space game. And they have other space mats, but I don't know. This one I really like the best.
Yeah, that one's pretty generic. The other ones are kind of more themed, aren't they?
Yeah, there's like a nebula in the middle, or there's like a, I don't know, a black hole or something. And it's really tied to a place. And
yeah.
I feel like if you're just out in the emptiness of space, you don't want this nebula in the middle there as you're doing Starfleet battles or something, right?
Right. Cool.
So, and again, it's soft. I don't know why, but like the Tundra mat I have, it's soft, but it doesn't feel as soft as these. So I don't know if they're using a new process or what they're doing. I would questions for them. So I don't know, for the love of God. Anyone who happens to know, or hey fellas, it's a Cigar Box Battle. Are you guys using a new process here? Like, why are these softer? They are so soft. Adrian, when you get yours, you have to tell me, pay attention to how soft they are. I know you think I'm crazy, but really, like, just compare, because you have one of the old ones, right, that are not the plush? Or do you only have the plush?
No, I only have two, and they're both plush.
Okay. I'm looking at my mountain of Cigar Box Battle mats. I have a sickness. My name's Jonathan. I collect Cigar Box Battle mats. I can't get over how nice these mats are. I could talk for an hour about how beautiful they are. I really could, and how nice they
Yeah, they're definitely.
They feel thicker too, actually.
What's that?
They feel thicker. And I can't quite tell if they are thicker or I don't know, but it feels like there's extra, I don't know what you would put in the middle. I mean, it's a single layer, I think, but.
Well, you could go get one of your other mats and then you could, do you have a micrometer?
I do not have a micrometer. Do you have one?
Yeah, I do, as a matter of fact.
Of course you do. Nerd alert. No. You'll have to bring one next time I see you and we can compare.
I will do that. I will not do that.
I know you will not do that. They feel different. They feel thicker. Well, I don't know.
They could be using a different material or something.
They might be. I do know that they said one of the reasons why they were really hoping people would back this Kickstarter is that for next year, for 2019, they think they're going to have to raise the prices of these mats because the cost has gone up and they didn't really want to have to raise price. But like, this is going to be the last time for a Kickstarter anyway that you'd be able to get the non-plush mats at that current price.
Yeah.
Do you remember what you paid for them? I don't remember what I paid. Yeah.
I honestly don't remember. I couldn't tell you.
I feel like it's $74 per mat, but I think that it might be for the plush.
Maybe. We got the power of the internet here. I guess we could check, but yeah, I don't remember. I can tell you this, it's worth it, in my opinion anyway.
I would agree. They are probably one of the most versatile pieces of terrain you'll get. And it seems stupid, right? Cause they're a mat and people think, well, I can get any of those most pad style mats. Who are they? Deep Cut? Is that who does the other ones?
A bunch of people do them, but yeah, you can get the ones that are like the poly, the freaking, mouse pad material.
Yeah. Fat Mat or whoever they are.
And there's nothing wrong with those, but they're heavy. They're harder to store. Maybe they're more durable. I kind of doubt that. I don't know. I much prefer these over the rubberized ones.
I probably shouldn't say there's something wrong with the other ones because someday I would actually like to, you know, properly review them and test it and stuff. And they'd be like, why would we let you do that if you badmouth our mats? I think there's a lot going for the mousepad ones. Namely, like if you spill something on it, it's going to beat up and bounce off like some placemats you can get.
Yeah.
But that's also part of the problem because they're so, as you said, thick and rigid and things. They're not going to be great for what Skybox battle mats are. And that's really contouring to your terrain. So you can
That's one of my favorite things about them is first of all, they're 6x4 and then a little bit more. So you have a good amount of overhang. So if you like want a battlefield with hills on it or whatever, and maybe you don't have hills like that you've made terrain piece, just get anything and tuck it underneath a mat and you have, you know, a book or whatever.
T-shirt, towel.
Yeah. Anything like that. And now you have a hill without having to like get the insulation foam and carve it and paint it and blah, 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 blah. There's nothing wrong with doing that. But if you haven't done that and you need a hill, just get a couple of books and tuck them underneath the mat. The mat will still fit on your 6x4 table, and now you've got hills all over the place with almost no effort.
Exactly. I think they're great if you're starting out. And it's really expensive to get into any aspect of this hobby. But if you're starting out, like, you don't know where to put your money first, right?
Yeah.
And so like, you can either get one as a gift or you can buy it. And then, like you said, you're basically set for terrain because hills and forests are the two, I would say, standard bread and butter kind of pieces of terrain most people would use. And
yeah.
So you got one of them covered. And then they actually make a mat. I think it's intended for DBA, but they make another mat where it's just different shapes and stuff and that you can cut out. So you cut it out for your other terrain pieces. And it's not 3D, but like you'd lay it on top of the mat and there's your forest. Or like we said, you can use a piece of paper, construction paper, you use felt or whatever.
Yeah.
And it gets you going for minimal cost. And so your investment's in the mat, right? And you'll have the mat forever. It'll be great. And you can use it for you can get a generic enough one. So you can use it for almost anything. You can get a really specific battle one or for whatever your needs are. And it grows with you. So you have that kind of fixed cost as opposed to like, oh, I need to get an Arctic tree. I need to get an evergreen tree. I need to get, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
I think it's smart. I did a little quick math and excluding shipping, they were $59 a piece if you got two mats through the Kickstarter. And then I know you got a greater discount the more mats you got. I think it probably capped out at like maybe $50 or $52 per mat.
Yeah. Okay.
Like that. And they're 60 inches by 80 inches in size. So that, like you said, over 6x4 feet.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's really nice. And I don't know about you, but I don't think I have enough of them.
No, I mean, they've got so many different designs. They've got designs that are for specific battles. Again, that has all the terrain laid out on the mat. Again, it's, you know, it's not 3D, but, it's all laid out and it's laid out to scale. They'll have both 15 millimeter and 28 millimeter versions of the same mat. it's pretty cool. It's a great product. It's one of the, I shouldn't say one of the few, but it's definitely one of the products that I can recommend that anybody pick it up without hesitation.
Yeah, you can get like grids and stuff on them too. So if you want hexes or squares.
Yeah.
Which now that I say that, I probably should have got on my water one for warts. Yeah, I don't even think of that at all.
Yeah, that would have been a good idea. Although we usually use the Wart C models for Naval Thunder, Battleship Row.
That's true. And then we don't need the.
but yeah, getting it with the boxes on it would have been a good idea. We could have just done plain old Wart C on it.
Next time I'll get another one and we'll do it.
I actually have the European mat with the grid squares laid over it.
Oh, for Rommel?
Intending at some point to play Rommel. There's no reason we can't do that. It's just we haven't done it.
So, let's make it happen.
All right.
Make it so. I gotta say, they do an ancient Roman mat, and they kind of highlighted it and pushed it, promoted it after Gangs of Rome came out. I think it looks better than the official Gangs of Rome mat. And I think people weren't happy when I said that in the Gangs of Rome Facebook group. But the official one is, again, it's one of those must pad things, but like the Cigar Box Battle one, I think just looks so much, much better.
Yeah.
You really get the feel of it that your city streets, but like maybe it's a little bit run down and I don't know, the great setting and like all their mats, you can put crap under, you can put stuff on top, you can do whatever, t-shirts, whatever. Yeah. It works. It's great.
Yeah. Definitely a favorite product.
What other gaming have you been up to lately?
I haven't been doing a whole lot of gaming, actually. I've been doing some getting ready for gaming. I've started painting. I don't remember if we talked about this on the last episode I was on or not, but I Two Fat Lardies recently on their website had a big discount package deal on Sharp Practice, which, as you know, is a game I've been interested in picking up for quite a while. And coincidentally, I'm sure it wasn't coincidentally, at the same time they had a discount going on, Richard Clark was a guest on the Beasts of War YouTube show, and they played a couple of live games of Sharp Practice, so I got all fired up about that. So I ordered Sharp Practice, and to go along with that, I ordered a pile of Perry miniatures. I already had a pile of Perry miniatures. I ordered a pile more and a bunch from Front Rank. To start working on 28mm Revolutionary War armies, because the only Rev War guys I have right now, I've got a handful of Hessians in 28, but the only Rev War army I have is a British army, and it's in 10mm, which isn't quite appropriate for Sharp Practice. So I've started painting those up. I've started painting the center companies for the Brits. So I've been doing that. I've been painting one unit at a time for Battlegroup Kursk. I call it Battlegroup Kursk because that was the name of the original book that came out, but it's really just Battlegroup. And now there's a bazillion theater books, which I have all of them now.
Well, there's a new one that I don't know if you have or not.
What is it?
And you can ask that. They showed it in the recent War Games, Soldiers and Strategy. I happen to see it mentioned. That might be it.
Yeah, I think Torch is the newest one, but I have that one.
Okay.
Yeah, the only one I don't have because it's been out of print for quite a while is Overlord.
And that's not on like Wargame Vault or anything like that? You get a PDF?
No, they don't. I don't think there's a PDF available. There might be a PDF available of that one. I'm not sure. I do have a PDF that I printed out of Kursk, but yeah, I'm not sure if Overlord is available. I'll have to check. I think if it was available, I would have got it. But anyway, but we did play, I played that with our buddy John. And that is a really entertaining set of rules. I like it a lot. It's infinitely better than, I hate to keep bashing Flames of War, but it's infinitely better than Flames of War. I will say it's a typical British rule set in which some of the rules aren't as clear as they could be, so there are some questions that come up, but they're pretty responsive on the on both the Facebook group and also the Battle Group forums, which it's published by Plastic Soldier Company, the rules are, and they're pretty responsive to questions there, so it's easy to get your questions cleared up. But that's a really, really enjoyable set of rules. I like that a lot. I've got another couple of other company size level World War II rule sets that I want to give a try, but I gotta ease John into that because he gets nervous. So it's like, we'll play a couple of games of Battle Group and we'll be really enjoying it. And then I'll mention, I really want to try set of rules X, Panzer Grenadier, whatever it happens to be.
Nuts.
Yeah. Well, that's 28 millimeter skirmish level.
Okay.
But then, yeah, then he'll get all nervous. And was like, oh, are you tired of battle group already? I said, no, I just got a freaking million sets of rules that I want to try.
Does he not realize you have like cases of rule books? Cause that's your thing. Like you just, rule book you buy.
He may not. And it is kind of a thing with me. I mean, I know I'm not alone in this, but I buy rule books the way a lot of people buy novels. I just like to read them and see what's what. But obviously eventually you want to play them all and it's just like, but yeah, he definitely did that when we've been playing Bold Action for how long have we been playing Bold Action? Basically we've been playing just Bold Action for about a year. And it's like, yeah, I got this new set of rules I want to try. And it was battle group and I kept talking it up and everything. And he's like, so are you tired of playing Bold Action now? God Christ. No, I just want to try some. We'll keep playing Bold Action. I promise, but I want to try this other game that I've had sitting on the shelf for a while. Come on. So anyway, it's a good set of rules. So you haven't played it yet, have you?
I played one game.
That's right, you did. Yeah.
I'm reserving judgment until I play it a few more times.
Okay. Yeah.
It did not instantly win me over, but it also did not instantly cause me to hate it.
Okay. See, I loved it, but, okay. Well, anyway, so I've been doing that. I've been painting the Rev War stuff. What else have I been doing? I'm slowly putting together the, some of the foreground buildings and some of the buildings from things from the basement that I've got. I also ordered a building. I just wanted to try this guy out. It's a guy in England, Charlie Foxtrot Models, who also does MDF terrain.
Mm-hmm.
So I ordered a building from him. A nice kit, very nice kit. Looks like it's fairly easy to put together. I haven't actually gotten around to putting it together yet, though. So I've got a lot of stuff on the workbench that I'm working on.
That's cool.
Yep.
You've been very productive.
I don't know about how productive I've been. I've been busy. I guess I've been fairly productive. Yeah.
You've been productive.
So what have you been painting, John?
Well, actually, I have been painting. Excuse me for those watching the video. I hurt my back not long ago, and so I got to keep shifting.
Because you're an 83-year-old man.
I am an old man. I feel like I got like the Icy Hot and Ben Gay on and all that. People don't need to know. But my poor wife, who's very pregnant, is like humoring me and trying to do it. I feel like an invalid, but I feel like that often. So that's okay. So I've been actually getting a lot done. I've talked about on our Patreon campaign and a little bit on the Facebook fan group. So if people aren't members, go to wargamingrecon.com/Patreon, become a member of the Wargaming Recon army over there for as little as $1 a month. I'm not going to give you the whole pitch because either you're going to do it or you're not. Be saying go do it. It isn't going to change your mind. But then the fan group on Facebook, if you're on there, it's free. You just join and we have all sorts of fun conversations and stuff. But I've been talking about how with the baby coming in January 1st is the due date, that we're moving stuff around. So for a little while, I've been in the gaming area, which is where I am now. And
do you call it a gaming area?
I do because I play games down here.
Okay. All
right. Do you think I don't play games?
If you say you play games, I believe you.
I mean, I played that Bob Ross game not long ago. I pulled out 1775. I actually do that solo a fair bit. Mm-hmm. I had that up. And I got, no one can see because it's this way back behind where the camera is, but I got Hitler's Reich that I'm going to be pulling out. And, I want to watch some videos on that because apparently there's some things that are confusing that are in one of the rule books, but not the other. We're going to do a proper review, but you can do that solo. So I want to like work through my pile of that. But what I've been doing is, this is going to become the primary space for the podcast studio, for gaming, and then also for, video work and stuff. So the hope is to actually get some more equipment. I have most equipment, but I need like lights and some other things so that I can actually do actual play videos and I'll have stuff set up on the table and actually get some footage of that. And in order to do all this stuff, I have to move things out of the actual office/podcast studio. And I moved down previously to just do recordings because like you and I were talking during a weeknight and the studio is right across my daughter's bedroom and like it's loud. So yeah. I'm not going to wake her up because every parent knows you don't wake up the kid. And so like she doesn't hear when I'm down here, but then with the new baby coming, the new baby is going to go into podcast studio and I'm taking over this whole space down here. So like that meant having to clean stuff out. Like I got rid of my aquarium that I had, like all that went, getting rid of some gaming stuff and all the other things. So like just working through and getting stuff done. And we upgraded all the electrical stuff down here, got new lights and things like that. And, I made a huge dent in just a lot of that. And it takes a lot of time just to do that kind of stuff to paint. But one of the things that I actually have been doing, it's been taking a lot of time as well, is prepping for the upcoming episode where we review some wet palettes. And so I'm kind of conducting a science experiment at the moment, waiting for things to mold.
They shouldn't mold.
Oh, no, they should. So we got, and of course at the time I couldn't find this fourth wet palette, so I got to add it in afterwards. So got the Everlasting wet palette that I got from Kickstarter, which is going to be an interesting review. Have the Privateer Press P3 wet palette that I got ages ago from Battleground Games. And then I did a homemade one, where you just get like a container and you get a sponge and then you get, like parchment paper. Mm-hmm. And so like any of those like lunch kind of containers that you get, or Tupperware kind of containers, or, you know.
Yeah, that's what I've got. I just made one with a sandwich box, paper towels and parchment, and it works. I've never grown mold in it. I've never tried to grow mold in it. So,
well, that's the thing. So I'm going to be judging on a few criteria, like how easy is it to use? How well does it, keep things from evaporating? Cause that's supposed to be one of the, main reasons you do it, that you close it and it lets you keep the paint usable for a few days or however long. So I'm kind of judging how long all that lasts, but the Everlasting one says that one of the problems is if you leave things too long in wet palettes in general, they get moldy. Because if you think about it, right, you get water, you get whatever's in the parchment paper, and you get whatever's in the paint, and there are some sort of organic compounds in some of these things. So they could in time grow mold. And that's a health issue, and you have all this other kind of stuff. So the Everlasting one says it's antimicrobial foam that they use instead of just a sponge or whatever. And so I want to see how long can these things go before you get mold on them. Hmm. And we're going on 2 weeks now, 2.5 weeks actually, of me testing, where I had pulled stuff out. I did a video, and I did part of the testing where I did some painting and blending and mixing and trying to see how well the paints mix and so forth, and how easy it was to use, because some of them are like taller, and some of them sell themselves as saying they're really accessible and easy because they're shorter lip and so forth and all this kind of stuff. But then at the same point, I was like, okay, I'm going to leave it and close it up and just see what happens, and how long does it have to go before it gets moldy and gross and unusable. And I mean, I would hope no one would use these and be like, I'm going to store this paint for like 2 months and then pull it out and intend to use it again. But like, if they say it's antimicrobial and you're supposed to be able to do this, that, and the other, I'm going to put it to the test. And I kind of feel like I'm on Mythbusters being like, let's bust that myth and let's see what's going to happen with this.
Yeah, I'll be interested to see the results of your highly scientific experiment. I don't think it would grow mold. I really don't.
I'm waiting to see.
As to pulling it out 2 months later and using it, I mean, if paint was still wet, I've left paint on mine. I'd mixed some paint that I was using for some of the battle group figures I was painting, and I painted a squad, and then I put everything away for like a week and a half too. It was about 2 weeks, maybe been 2 weeks and a couple of days, and I went back and the paint was still perfectly wet and it was fine. I pulled it out and painted with it with the exact same colors that I had mixed for the other guys. So if it was still good after 2.5 weeks, if I went back 2 months later and it was still good, I would certainly use it. Let me put it this way. If I had mixed specific colors for a specific purpose and I still had a lot of those colors left on the palette, I wouldn't throw that away just because I was afraid it might mold in a month or two. Assuming I could, now maybe even a month or two, that stuff would have been unusable. I don't know. Like I said, it was 2 weeks, but yeah, I'll be interested to see what happens with it.
Well, I was surprised one of them, and I wasn't checking every day, and I made a point to keep them in a part of downstairs that's not too humid, that doesn't change a lot of temperature, because I know those are kind of issues. Although lately where we are, for like the past month and a half, it's been pretty humid. So try as you might, you can only do so much with that. But I was very surprised that one of them pretty quickly, became unusable. It dried out, no mold. And then another one was also pretty unusable. It was getting to be on the point. And that was at my 1 week check.
Oh.
And it probably happened even before that. And so I was very surprised by that. And there was only one of them that was actually really great for usability. And I think the one that was kind of borderline, I'm going to blame it on me. I think maybe I didn't put enough water in.
Yeah.
But like, it's not supposed to be like floating in water. It's just supposed to be enough to create a layer. And that's what I did. So I don't know if it's user error or if it's design error or what it is. But I'm going to blame it on me just for the time being, but I was still kind of surprised by that situation and how it goes. I'm expecting that the antimicrobial nature of the one that claims to have that won't be as good. And I'm hoping I'm wrong. That one, Everlasting, also in their Kickstarter video said that it was waterproof. And I don't think any of them are waterproof because they also say in their campaign that it's not waterproof, but they show in the video like that you can just take it with the stuff in and throw it in your bag and it's going to slosh around, whatever. It's not going to get out. It's not going to get on anything. And that doesn't seem right to me. So that's something I'm also going to test. I'm going to get it. I'm going to seal it in a really large plastic bag, like a Ziploc bag or something, and throw it in my backpack and see what happens with it.
Yeah.
I think it's going to fail. But I, so far I've noticed there are things that I like and dislike about each of them. And I mean, that's how it should be. I don't think I've, as of yet, found the perfect wet palette. But it's a judgment call. It's most things. So you kind of have to weigh all the things, price and design and all that kind of stuff. So that's been a big thing that I've been working on lately. And then just doing more videos and stuff. And then, like I said, part of that, I was doing some painting of, those, field emplacements, the trenches and foxholes and stuff. So base coating some of that kind of stuff, which I would have done by priming it by spray can. But it's too humid out. You can't do that with all this humidity out. Just it doesn't work.
Works fine. I do it in the house with the AC running. It's great.
No, like, but you're not supposed to do it inside because cancer. But and I mean outside.
Yeah, outside you definitely can't do it outside in this weather. As to getting cancer, is there anything that you do that's not going to give you cancer and kill you?
Dying.
Go ahead. Go ahead and prime in the house. You'll be fine.
The real reason I do it is because I don't want to get paint on stuff.
That is kind of a problem. You got to be careful about that. I've got a big box that I do it into, but yeah, that kind of sucks. But
I get paint everywhere. I know I would. Like so I do it outside on our driveway because I did it once in the grass, thinking like I don't want to get paint on the driveway, and then I ended up losing some parts of the model, and like I don't know, like the grasshoppers took them, or I have no idea. So I decided I wasn't going to do that. And back when we bought all those, I can't even remember the name of the manufacturer, they were like, what are they, 6 mil fantasy stuff? I got Ratman and you got Dwarves or whatever.
Yeah, they were 15s.
15s, okay. So I did a bunch of them and I was like, I'm just going to do the brown and do whatever and dry brush. And I think I ended up giving them to Alex to finish painting, which reminds me, I should talk to him about that. So I did them on the driveway and I did them on a box. So I put them on a box and I laid them, you know, flat. So I did one side and then I did the other. Yep. But then there was enough of a wind that some of it got on the driveway. And my wife is like, did you paint the driveway? And I was like, well, not intentionally. And I said, give it time. It'll go away. And if not, I get black paint and I can just spray some black paint over it and it'll blend back into our blacktop and you won't notice.
And who cares anyway? It's a driveway.
Well, that's what I said. But I mean, I can kind of understand. You don't want it looking like crap. But so I did that and that's what I do because I'm not going to lose the stuff.
No.
And there you go. That's where I prime. But like you said, with this humidity, I can't deal with that humidity. It's terrible out.
Yeah, it's impossible.
I'm not going to do it inside. So I've been trying and doing and just working on stuff and following Kickstarters. It's a lot of work. And actually, we got this Saturday, which will be this past Saturday by the time people listen to this because it's coming up Monday. Yeah. We got some gaming going on too. That should be a lot of fun for us.
Yeah, Hobby Bunker Game Day. So.
Yeah, they got some events going on and sure there'll be shopping and all sorts of stuff coming up and just fun festivities.
Oh yeah.
Well, do you have any other cool gaming things you want to talk about or happenings?
I don't think I do actually. No, nothing comes to mind. We did actually have our first, although we've been talking about it for a while, we actually had our first actual role-playing game session in a long time. About a week and a half ago, we played Dungeon World. I think you mentioned that somewhere, Twitter, Facebook, somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
But my daughter's been wanting to play that game, so she's GMing Dungeon World for us. So probably not going to be a super regular thing with everybody's schedules. We're thinking maybe once, maybe twice a month if we can manage it. But that was a lot of fun. That was the first action. I've done some D&D encounters which is okay. It kind of scratches the itch, but that was the first actual role playing we've done in, geez, forever.
Well, yeah, like way back we were going to do Dungeons and Dragons, fifth edition, right? And Alex was going to do, and then it kind of died on the vine.
Oh, I'm sure he'll get that off the ground eventually.
And I think the case of that was like, we did the thing where we were creating characters and the backstory and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But then I think that night we really needed to set a date for when we were going to do the next thing.
Yeah.
And that never happened. And then it became basically impossible to set. And that's one reason why when we did Dungeon World, which like I was really excited about, because normally this whole theater of the mind thing is not something I buy into. Like I want to see stuff. I want to move things around. I'm tactile, right? Which is why I love these battle mats, because I can't stop talking about them. Which none of these would be good for Dungeon World.
No.
But so like the idea of like, oh, we just sit there and we don't do, like it's literally collaborative storytelling as opposed to other stuff.
Yeah.
I was like, okay, you know, that sounds interesting, but I was kind of hesitant. I just thought like it'd be fun to get out if nothing else, but I loved it. I really loved it. And so that's why at the end of the night, I was kind of really pushing for us to set the next date, figuring if we set it that way, we'll definitely do it. And, it's been more troublesome than I expected and I should know better, but to set the next one, but I'm actually more confident that we're actually going to have another session.
Yeah. Well, right now we're looking at, we're going to do it this Wednesday, but that fell apart a little bit. But, right now we're planning on next Wednesday.
Oh, okay.
So 7:30 or 8 o'clock, whenever people can make it. Okay. After 8 o'clock, it's getting a little bit later.
Well, the place closes at 9 anyway. We've been gaming at Crossroad Games.
Yeah. It would actually be better if we could, I know it doesn't really work for you and I'm sure it won't for Alex, but here we are planning on a gaming session on the podcast. Probably not what people want to hear.
Hey, people love this guy.
Be better if we could start at 7 or 7:30, actually.
Yeah, I mean, for the, you know, odd occasion, it's not terrible for me. Just my kid goes to bed at 7 and she's queen of prolonging stuff.
Yeah.
So like tonight she was supposed to, it's like 7 o'clock and then she's supposed to do whatever and then go to bed. And it's like 7:15 and she's still not in her bedroom and get ready to go. And it's like, we know what you're doing. Just get in and go to bed. And like I understand what it's like as a kid, because I have these fond memories of, you know, I mean, older than her, but being a kid and then like going to bed and then hearing my parents playing my Nintendo and being like, I want to go play Mario. Like, I don't want to be bad. Like my aunts and my cousins are over and everyone's playing Mario Brothers. Like I want to get out there and play Super Mario too. So like, why am I in bed? That's ridiculous. Who cares about school tomorrow? I want to get up and play Super Mario, but oh wait, no, I can't because, so I understand, but at the same point, like get to bed because like there are things we got to do, you know?
Yep.
So that makes it hard. But every so often, it's not an issue. The only time it is an issue is with like my wife's work schedule, because she works for the university and they just have odd hours. It's very hard. So sometimes it's hard for when she gets home. But otherwise, I think the holdout is Alex, really, but something to talk with him. I'm really intrigued about the campaign. And I know this is that old trope of like, tell me about your character kind of thing that makes people roll their eyes, but like, the setting is really fascinating in knowing how with Dungeon World is not, the emphasis is not on combat. And in our first session, we just failed everything so bad.
Yeah.
And like we had a fight no matter how hard your daughter tried to make it so that we wouldn't have to fight these poor creatures who were trying to tell us about this crazy weird thing that had happened. And no matter what, it was just like, okay, well, you're going to fight because you kept on failing everything. So here you go.
Yeah,
and even then it was bad.
Yeah, it's interesting the way the system is set up, and maybe we can do a show about this later actually and talk about it. I don't know if it's a game that a lot of people are familiar with, but it's like there's basically levels of success when you roll. It's like when you roll, you either succeed astoundingly and you do whatever it is you want to do and maybe you get a little bonus, or you succeed, but something bad happens too, or you just utterly fail. Now, there's no set rules about what has to happen if you utterly fail. It's completely up to the GM and the way the players interact together to tell this story, and the GM will come up with something appropriate. But the fact is we horribly failed practically every role we made. So it's like the entire role play session was basically, all right, you cocked it up again. How are we going to mold the story such that you don't all die in the first session, basically.
It was epic. It was so epic.
It was a lot of fun. I'll be honest, she really wanted to play it. So it's like, you know, I'll ask the guys and see if they want to give it a shot. I wasn't all that excited about it, to be honest, but it's pretty awesome. So yeah, had a good time.
She's a really good game master too. Like she just was able to kind of roll with the punches and I threw a lot of punches. So like she just kind of delicate.
I warned her about you going into it. I said, the thing with John is he's going to make it as hard as he possibly can to make this, to make this enjoyable. So. Like,
whatever you expect to happen, I'm going to choose the thing that you don't expect.
Whatever's going to make whatever given situation you're in worse, that's what he's going to do. Well, so, but
why not?
She put a lot of work into getting ready for it and everything because it was the first thing she'd ever run.
Oh, she did a great job. It was beautiful. I loved how she did the terrain on those index cards and she kind of like drew stuff out and it made it easy. So you kind of had that blending of theater of the mind with not, so you could kind of follow along, but like just the way she conveyed information and everything. I was surprised. I really thought she had done a lot of it.
Yeah. No, that was the first time. So, but it was, like I say, it took me by surprise. It was like, cause I'm kind of with you. I mean, theater of the mind is nice, but I was kind of. I don't know. I read the introductory chapters of the rule book and I was like, yeah, it sounds okay. But this whole collaborative storytelling thing is because I'm not good at it.
Me neither.
I've tried to GM stuff and I even have a hard time with that coming up with stuff off the cuff. But with Dungeon World and that whole set of series of games and rules that it's based on, it's the whole collaborative effort that kind of makes it better. So, you know, if you get stuck on something, then somebody else just chimes in and they pick up the thread of the story and you go from there. It really works well. I was impressed.
Well, if you think about it, like we're minis guys, right? So imagine going to Historicon or Total Con or the Game Day or just one of our places and be like, okay, we're going to play Bolt Action, but we're not playing with any models. We're just going to say like, this is what they do. And everyone be like, you're going to do what? And they'd look at you like you were a moron. Yeah. And like, that's really our world of view that we come from is then to be told, okay, you don't need anything. You just show up yourself and then you talk and that's what happens. And then things go like for me, it was kind of liberating and it was also kind of like, wait, what?
Yeah.
But like, I loved it.
Yeah. And it's like, I was like, this is going to be a really hard thing for the DM to be able to run something like this. But the reality is after experiencing it, I think it's probably easier than running a game like D&D. Like D&D, it's like everybody is, it's very regimented set of rules. You know, it's like, if you want to do, you know, you want to take action X, you roll dice. This is the number you need, blah, 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 blah. It's very, and everybody knows what the rules are. It doesn't matter what kind of trick the DM sort of throws at you. It's like whatever you run into around the corner, you know that. You know, you're going to roll a die 20 to hit it and you know what the number, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And so it's like, it makes it a little bit more difficult on the DM, I think, to kind of ad lib in that kind of a situation because you're trying to ad lib through the rules and like, you know, say something disastrous happens and you don't actually want like the party to be wiped out or something really good happens for the party and, you know, maybe they kill your big boss character. Maybe they one shot him or whatever with a super lucky roll. And you didn't want that to happen. It's hard to ad lib that stuff away in D&D because the rules are the rules and everybody knows what they are. If you know what I'm saying, but
no, I do. I think that's why people who feel that way. And I agree with you. I think that's why they kind of go to early editions of it. Like first edition, I'm told doesn't have really much in common with the new stuff that people play where it's more free. So you might not roll a dice very often. And if you do, the GM might be the only one rolling the dice, so they roll for you.
Yeah.
You don't actually, and like you and I both know people who are like, well, I either want a bucket of dice to roll or like I need to be the one to roll the dice, right? So it's like their thing. But like the GM's like, no, I roll and I roll it behind my fancy Dungeon Master screen. So you have no idea what I roll. I'm telling you what you rolled, but that may not actually be what I rolled. But like with the newer edition, even if you did that, that wouldn't fly because players would be like, well, where's the accountability? And I need to see and whatever. So then if the players are rolling it, like you said, like you can try to be like, well, I rolled or whatever on the back and you can't see because I'm behind the screen. But the player's like, well, yeah, you would have needed whatever though. And I don't believe you. And then you spend 20 minutes arguing about what actually happened and not actually playing. And like, that's ridiculous.
Yeah. Well, that wouldn't be in that game very long, but yeah, I don't know. It makes Anyway, it was very different from what I expected. I liked it quite a bit. So
I can't wait to play again. I had a blast and I would recommend it. And like you said, it wasn't known to me as a set of rules. I guess I've seen the books before and just didn't pay any attention to them. But yeah, I think they're worth looking up.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely.
That's good stuff. What else do you have going on?
Work.
Yeah.
No, that is basically it for as far as gaming goes. There's a couple of other things. We got to have something to talk about on the next show.
Yeah. So I know the plan is for next time to do the Wet Palettes, getting their review and all that kind of stuff. And then we get some openings, but things can always move around as need be. And, even things that we have in the episode guide for later this year, they may or may not be happening. And even if they do, I don't know if they can happen, when they can happen. I've actually been thinking about maybe doing away with the episode guide.
Really?
So I'm not sure how much people actually look at it who aren't me. In which case, it doesn't need to be a thing for people to look at. And right. I'm also not sure how much value there is to giving episode numbers in the recording as opposed to just titling, using that in the title. So like this is episode 214, right? And like I had been using that to say, oh, go check out the show notes for this episode. I don't know how often people are actually doing that, if it's enough, whereas it can perfectly well be better used maybe to just say, go to the website at wargamingrecon.com and the newest episode will always be there.
Right.
And since episodes come out every other week, normally, yeah. And you go on the front page, you get basically about a month to half a month worth of content right there on the front page.
You
don't
do,
even direct you to a specific whatever. And so then that saves time on my end and kind of makes things a little easier and smoother.
Yeah, I think it's a good idea to have the episode number though. Because you do refer back to previous episodes frequently, and it's a lot easier for somebody to look up episode, 198 than it is go search for that episode where Jonathan and Adrian babble about utterly useless crap until the very end where, you know what I mean?
That's so true, but only if people are actually doing that, and I don't know if they are.
Well, yeah.
That's a great question, which could be useful for the next time we do a Wargaming Recon listener survey, I guess.
It could indeed. It could indeed.
And which might be almost time to do that again, because did it in, when did we do it?
I thought it was December last year, whatever.
Yeah, I think you might be right. So that might mean it's time to do it again, which would be handy because it's also currently time for the Great Wargaming Survey over at greatwargamingsurvey.com, I believe, Wargame Soldiers and Strategy are doing. And I was supposed to do a video for that, and we'll see if that ends up happening or not. Mislaid plans.
Okay,
Jasper was supposed to come on the show, but then that didn't work out either with scheduling. It's hard.
Yeah, it definitely is.
It's not easy. We had plans for this kind of stuff, but one bit of exciting news that I think some of our local listeners will really like. Why did this not get updated? The date and location have been confirmed for Huzzah for 2019.
Yeah.
Well, they'll all be. That's weird. I was just looking at our website, and the correct information shows in one page but not the others. So it's May 17th to the 19th, 2019, at the Doubletree in Portland, Maine. And that's all set. And the other exciting bit of news is by the time people listen to this episode, by the time this comes out, that week, I believe, rooms will be open for booking at the convention rate. It's early, which normally annoys me, but I'm kind of excited.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it's crazy that it opens up to that. But you know what? I'll book it.
I mean, I know I'm going. It's the one convention I'm doing in 2019.
Yeah.
Because I was going to go to TotalCon, but that's a no-go because like the kid's going to be born in beginning of January, and that's just too close. There's no way I can get to TotalCon for stuff. So TotalCon's a no-go, which means
you can't really say it's a no-go because it's not like the kid will be being born that weekend. What you should say is, I'm not willing to make the effort.
That's not accurate at all.
That's completely accurate.
No, it really isn't. And I missed out the other time too when my first kid was born. I mean, admittedly, that was beginning of February, so slightly closer. But even so, I don't know. It's a tough time of year when everyone has really awful diseases because it's winter. And then last thing you want to do is bring all that back to a kid who's a month and a half old or whatever.
Yeah, I suppose. I don't know if I'm going to go this year either. I don't know. I'll decide when it gets closer. If I go, I won't stay overnight. I'll probably day trip out there.
But. Yeah. And see, I had wondered about doing that, but then I thought more and more about the germ issue, and I'm a bit of a germaphobe, but I'm nowhere like certain celebrity who's bald, who became famous by putting a rubber glove on his head. But even so, I was like, you know, I don't want to chance it because last thing I want is to get like norovirus or something from someone accidentally at the convention and then bring it back and have like a month and a half year old kid just like throwing up everything. Like that's awful.
Yeah. You probably won't get that at the convention. You'll probably pick it up at work, but whatever.
So I figured TotalCon's not happening for 2019. Huzzah. Cause by May rolling around, that should be okay.
Yeah.
And things will be good. And then that brings us to 2020, for new convention schedule. And I'm not sure, but I think I might be downsizing to one convention a year anyway. We'll see.
Yeah. I think you should try to do one of the HGMS conventions.
I really want to go to NashCon, which I know is not one of the HGMS ones, but
no, it isn't. I wouldn't mind going to that one too, though.
That is on my bucket list. I really want to go there. I really want to go to Enfilade because I think that would be a lot of fun. I kind of want to go to Fallen.
Yeah, that's one of the HMGS conventions. That would be a good one. They got Historicon, Fallen, and Cold Wars.
And then I'd love to hit up a trade show in the UK.
Yeah, I would like to do that too. That would obviously be expensive.
I mean, they just did Not Another Partisan. I think that's what they call it.
Yeah.
And then, it feels like it wasn't that long ago that they had the other one. Why can't I think of the name in London?
Salute.
Yes. Thank you. But I think Salute would be a lot of fun to go to.
Yeah. Yeah.
Big, but I think it'd be worth doing.
Yeah.
Just there's so many people over there, all the manufacturers and stuff, but then like people we know or we have connections to from the show. I think it'd be a blast to go and like see these people there and just to be there.
Yeah. No, I think it would be awesome. I would love to do it. I can't realistically seeing it happen, but I would love to.
I agree, but like it's on my longer term list, but like short term, NashCon is really where I think I want to go outside of like up around here.
Yeah.
How that would work, like swapping out or doing in addition to, I don't know the details, but like NashCon's really where I want to go. And from what I'm told from someone who's involved with organizing it, kind of like as an advisor sort of person, the vibe that they tell me about it reminds me a lot of Huzzah.
Yeah.
Okay. And so I kind of think of it as like Huzzah of the South. And I don't know if that's an accurate portrayal of it, but like that makes me all excited to be like, okay, I really need to go to this thing.
Yeah.
But then again, like travel time, I'm not going to fly. So that's a long way to drive or train or whatever you do. And, or bus, I guess. That'd be terrible.
God, that's traveling like a freaking animal in a bus.
I don't think I would do, but like.
It's not that far to drive, really. I mean, it's not that bad.
Not terrible, but I mean, it's certainly better than trying to drive out to say, I don't know, Enfilade or something. And, but like, I think it's doable. I think it's, like you said, not terribly far. Close enough, and then the venue is supposed to be pretty nice.
Yeah.
It's just kind of a matter of like getting there and then hotel and so forth, and then going and figuring out what to play and like learning their way of doing it. We were talking at the start of the show about Dwarven Forge and how they do Kickstarters and how it's, for me anyway, is so different from anything else. Every convention is kind of different in how they handle stuff. I've heard rumors that Huzzah is considering doing a ticket setup, kind of like how TotalCon used to, where you'd buy tickets for each event that you're going to. And like, I don't know, does NashCon do that? Do they do like a inclusive fee for the whole convention? How do you do signups? And do they do like tracks? And, like, I don't know. So
I don't know. So it would be like you would pay for each individual game you wanted to play in. Is that what they're thinking about?
Huzzah, it's a per time slot. So a game could cover more than one time slot, I think. But I think the plan is for it to be 4-hour time slots, but I don't quite know if that's sure. It's very early stages, just stuff that's being bantered around online. But they're investigating it. I don't think a decision's been made yet. I'm hoping they don't do that though.
There's only one right decision there.
See, I think, and not to compare, I don't think it's necessarily fair to compare different types and different sizes of conventions to one another, but I think there's a clear reason why TotalCon did away with the ticket system.
Yeah.
And I know like conventions kind of go back and forth. Sometimes they'll have one and then they go away and they do something else and then they come back and so forth. And I understand the real benefit to doing it is that you have accountability, where if you just do that inclusive fee for the weekend or however long the convention is, maybe people show up to games they sign up for, maybe they don't. Whereas with, if you're paying to go not only to the convention, but to the actual game, you're more likely to show up.
More likely to show up for the game, because we've been there where people just didn't show up for the freaking game that they signed up for. And that's not unpleasant when that happens. Yeah. So
and,
yeah.
And then I you can, well, like, cause you can also give kind of like give a kickback almost to the people running the game if they want. So yeah. And like, it's nice. It can kind of help keep things going, but like, I don't know. It leaves an unsavory taste in my mouth.
Yeah. It's not, I didn't like it when TotalCon did it, and it was like, it's like, why are you making this hard? Was kind of, but, yeah, we'll see how it works out. I mean, can't blame them if they want to give it a try and see how it goes. I'm not a fan of or in favor of it, but nobody asked me. So
it won't keep me from going. It's not like, oh they're doing that. Get that rage quit table flip princess thing. Like, it's just, I'm not going to do that. Can you imagine if I just did that now? I'd be like, forget this. And all the equipment goes up and people just, and the mic's like, bang, 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 bang.
No, yeah, definitely won't do that, but, I would prefer not to see a ticket system. Let me put it that way.
I will say in the case of TotalCon, when they did have that, there were quite a few games that looked really interesting to me, but they weren't interesting enough for me to chance paying it, tickets for, because I didn't know if I was going to have a good time, if I was going to like it. It was so unfamiliar. So I think it's more inclusive by having this one level fee, and then you're more likely, I think, to try stuff that you wouldn't have tried otherwise. Try a new game, try a new GM or whatever.
Yeah, and that's one of my big reasons for going to cons is I hardly ever play games that I already play. It's like it's a great place to try out like new rule sets and whatnot. So it's a lot of the games I play in, that's, I try to make it stuff that I haven't played before. I've played very little, so.
Exactly, I'm with you on that. Well, why don't we wrap things up? How can our listeners stay in touch with what you're doing?
Probably the best way is the Facebook page, the Facebook group, the fan group. You can hit me up on Twitter, but we talk about that all the time. I don't tweet very much. I usually, when I do tweet, it's just snark and nobody wants to read that. So the Facebook page is really the best.
Well, you reply when you're mentioned on Twitter at
Abe. Oh yeah. I'll reply. I'm just saying that there's no point in following me because I don't tweet like 32 different times a day. So.
I've been trying to be better about tweeting because of the interview with Stefan Pokorny and Nate Taylor. Because Stefan and I had this discussion where I was like, I don't really understand Twitter and the 140, now 280 character limit. And I was like, how can you have a meaningful discussion of that? And he made some good points for why it could be worth actually tweeting. And so I was like, do you know what? I decided I was going to give it a try. All right. So I try to at least once a day get on there. And I may not post anything, but like just try to get on and interact and that kind of stuff. People, of course, can keep up to date with us at orgamingrecon.com. We're on iTunes. We're on all the things where you get your favorite podcasts at, whether it's us or other cool podcasts out there. I got to say, I'm really addicted right now to another podcast that I actually want to mention that I think people might like. And it is called, I'm just pulling it up right now. It's called Tides of History. It's from the people over at Wondery. They do this whole lineup of like true crime and historical podcasts and that kind of stuff. But I'm listening to a series they do, and they do usually like 6-episode series about different aspects of history. And they're doing one right now on the 100 Years War. And it makes me want to play 100 Years War. So they just finished up with the siege of Orléans, and that get into Joan of Arc and all that kind of stuff. And just like all the political machinations that were involved with that, and fascinating things I never knew, very well researched, deep dives, but each episode's maybe an hour. Just really well done. So I like to listen to that on Pocket Casts, which costs you $1.99 on iOS on that app store, but I think it's a great podcast app. So whatever podcast app you like, you can find us at. We are on Facebook, Wargaming Recon. We got the official page where we talk about the show and all that stuff. But then, like you said, Adrian, we got the fan group. We'd recommend people who join. We got the Patreon. We're on Twitter at Wargaming Recon, and we're at other places too, but don't go to those other places because we don't do anything there. So like, cause we're on Snapchat, but ask me the last time I sent a snap. We're on Instagram. Ask me the last time I used Instagram for anything other than sharing a photo so I could use the filters, but share it onto Twitter or Facebook.
Oh God.
Like, I mean, I suppose I could start Instagramming my food again, because that's what you're supposed to do, but like, no one wants to see me just be like, hey, look what I'm eating for dinner. Snap. Hey, look what I'm eating for lunch. Snap. Like, that's annoying, right?
It's hugely annoying. That's why I get pissed off when you do it at cons.
Well, cause that's different. That's a destination, right?
So I see.
Like, people had to see what we were having when we were having the Chinese buffet that had more American food than Chinese food in it, which was really weird. What was that? On the wall? Off the wall? Great Wall? No.
I think it was Great Wall.
Great Wall Buffet in Portland, Maine.
I think so. I gotta look it up now. Go ahead. Keep talking.
I mean, it had good sushi. What did I get? They had tons of crawfish. What did I get? Oh, I got tons of shrimp, and the shrimp were really good, actually. I've watched a lot of YouTube videos on how to get the most value for going to a buffet. And, okay.
We were almost right. It's the Super Great Wall Buffet.
Darn. So close. Super Great Wall. In Portland, Maine, near the Maine Mall.
Yeah.
Speaking of food that people probably don't care about, my latest flavor of the week that I really want to try, and I'm hoping to co-op either you or Alex to do, I need to try hot pot. I've never done hot pot, and I really want to try it.
The only place around here I know that does it is that Chinese restaurant in the center of Norwood there that we went to that I almost got us thrown out of. So I don't think I can go. It's going to have to be you and Alex.
I really want to try. Like, I mentioned to my wife, but she can't go because you got to be careful with all that foodborne potential illness things and how well things are cooked and sanitized and everything.
Yeah,
and sure, like, for us, it'd be perfectly healthy, but you can't. So I'm like, I got to go with my friends and find a way. I need to try hot pot. I go to bed dreaming of hot pot.
I could go back there. Like, if you and Alex want to go, we could go over there. Cause I had the beard then and I've shaved that off. So, maybe they wouldn't recognize me.
Yeah. They had no idea who you were. You're forgettable, right?
Yeah. 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 We can try that.
Cool. So we're at all the things, and maybe there'll be some pictures of us having hot pot that I'll share that it's not gaming. And so why would you look at it? But maybe you will, because who knows? And actually, I made a brief mention at one point that this episode may not have been edited by Joshua. And previously I've said that Joshua wasn't editing stuff. He had this medical situation. He was in hospital. He's home recovering. He's not 100%, but while he's out, he's not editing audio, of course, because he has more important things to do. So I'm editing audio, which is not a great thing. There's a reason why he got hired to do that. So this episode might sound a little different, as was the last one that we put out. Joshua's coming back soon. He's working on it, but he has, and this kind of ties into what we're talking about with Hot Pot, Adrian. He has a new podcast that he's working on. It might be video as well. Cause as he told me, when you're home and you're trying to recover and, you figure you have to be creative, at least when your work isn't paying you because you're a contractor and work is stupid, that he's doing a new show. It's going to mix geek culture, gaming, and just kind of things going on. And I can't get his artwork to show up, which is really weird because he sent me the artwork, but he has this really cool artwork, to go with it. And it's going to be coming out, I think, later this year, later in 2018. So I'm pretty excited about it. And I think he might talk about like food and stuff. Like, this is something I've actually kind of thought about. Like, when we go to a convention, right? Like, what food would you eat? How can you eat more affordably? How can you eat healthier? Cause some people go to like Historicon, right? Or they go to Gen Con and they may not get a room. They never sleep. They don't bother eating. They don't take the medications. Like, it's really dangerous to do these things. And like, Adrian, you and I have been playing World of Warcraft lately because the new expansion came out. And one of the things in a lot of YouTube videos about the new expansion is like, make sure that you take care of yourself, go to the bathroom, get food, drink water, stay hydrated, all that kind of stuff. And so it seems like it'd be of interest, but it might be something that Joshua does on his, gamer and geek kind of life, lifestyle show or whatever.
Mm.
I think it'd be interesting and I look forward to seeing what he does with it because he's a talented, gentleman down there. And I'm sure all of you will join me in wishing him a very speedy recovery. He's doing pretty well.
Good news.
Yeah. So I want to thank you for joining me tonight, Adrian. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you very much for having me, John. It's been wonderful.
That's right. When we play games, we got to do that again. I got to get the pictures of you being happy, having a good time playing the game.
Yeah, I guess that's a thing now. So yeah.
It's, we like made our own, we got to like memeify it though. Like get the, you know, like the black box thing going on with the stuff and just get that going. We'll make it a thing.
Oh my God. Okay.
It's so good. But thank you for being on. I want to thank everyone for taking the time to listen to this episode of Wargaming Recon. Remind you, we do all sorts of stuff here on the show. We actually do product reviews. We have guests on. You name it, we do it. We've been doing this for so long, I can't even keep track of it. It's really, really long time. But you can get all the things we do by going to our website at wargamingrecon.com. You can find out all the stuff there, and we're on social media and all that other stuff that I talked about. But really, go to the website. That's it all. Make sure you subscribe, rate and review us on iTunes. And if you watch our videos on Facebook or on YouTube, be sure to like, subscribe, and click that little bell icon on YouTube. It's the notifications. And by doing that, it lets you know when we have new content coming out that you should go and watch. Because there's so many videos out there and video channels on YouTube that people subscribe to. And like, you get like 100 of them, right? And you can't keep up to date with that. But if you really like what we do, you're going to want to make sure that you get those notifications first so that you can be like, hey, look, there's a new video from Wargaming Recon. They did a new unboxing. They did a Hitler's Reich playthrough or whatever. And you can kind of get access to all that. So check all that out and know that no matter what's going on in your life, no matter how busy you are, no matter how much time you're spending kickstarting games, playing games, going to Historicon, or getting ready for just snuggling with your cigar box battle mats, know that you have to, you gotta, you need to keep on gaming. Are you always on the go? Why not take Wargaming Recon with you? If you use an app like Pocket Casts, you can listen to your favorite episodes of Wargaming Recon on your mobile device. Wargaming Recon is a proud member of the TSR Podcast Network. Visit WargamingRecon.com/TSRPN for more information and to learn about the other good shows on the network. This recording is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Share Alike license. Many thanks to Andrew and Court for inspiring the show's name. Wargaming Recon is dedicated to the memory of longtime listener Andrew. I ask all listeners to join me in a moment of silence in memory of Andrew. Wargaming Recon is made possible by listeners like you. Become a Patreon backer to get behind-the-scenes content and new episodes before everyone else, starting at $1 per month. Visit WargamingRecon.com/Patreon to become a Patreon backer. Wargaming Recon is proudly sponsored by Enfilade. Enfilade is a flagship historical wargaming convention for the Northwest Historical Miniature Gaming Society. Enfilade is held annually over Memorial Day weekend at the Red Lion Inn in Olympia, Washington. Enjoy the largest historical miniature gaming convention west of the Mississippi at Enfilade. Visit www.nhmgscitadel.com for more information. Wargaming Recon is proudly sponsored by the Maine Historical Wargamers Association. They're the folks behind Huzzah! Historical Wargaming for New England. Huzzah will take place May 18th through the 20th, 2018, at the Doubletree in South Portland, Maine. Experience some of the best historical wargaming at Huzzah! Visit www.huzzahcon.com for more information.